It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 95% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And it is Sunday morning. I think by now you've all heard the main news. It's another one of those weeks where, oh, nothing's happened all week. We don't have a topic all week.
And yeah.
Then Saturday, a bunch of things happened. But the big one is that Adam West passed away.
Friday night.
Yeah, the news kind of circulated Saturday at the age of 88 years old.
Yeah, I had no idea. He was born in like 1928 or 1929.
Well, you figure the show was 66.
Right.
I remember.
And again, it makes sense, but it's like as soon as I heard that, I was like, what? Like, it seems so long ago.
Right. Well, it was almost 100 years ago, which is what he was.
It's insane.
Well, I remember when we were talking about the animated movie that came out last year.
Oh,
people were like, oh, Adam West sounds old. And I'm like, we did the math, and I'm like, he's 87 years old.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was maybe the last thing he's done, because there's supposed to be a sequel with William Shatner.
As Two-Face.
So the way animation schedules run, he's probably done it.
And oh, you think he did the voice recording and everything, and they're just animating
it? They usually do it before animation.
Yeah.
So that might be the final Adam West as Batman, the final Adam West performance, unless there's like some Family Guys in the can.
Yeah.
So, but obviously when that Blu-ray comes out, it'll have the whole tribute.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it'll be extensive. And you know what? He'll be on like the Academy Awards. They'll do like in memorandum, it'll have him.
Oh, yeah. Or they'll forget him and people will be very angry.
Oh, people will crucify him if they do that.
Because he wasn't big.
It's like everywhere. It's unbelievable how many people are posting.
And so heartfelt. I reposted already a picture. Kevin Conroy posted a picture of the two of them together.
Yeah.
And that really was, really moving to me.
There was a really cool one. John Cassaday posted it on Facebook.
Oh, I did see that.
Did you see it where it's him crawling up like the side of the building, but it's in the clouds?
That was the best one I've seen, because there was like, I've seen ones of like Robin crying and
somebody did a drawing where like Robin is holding like the Batman mask
and it's like I just don't feel like that's the right tone. I mean, Adam West lived a long
It wasn't like a tragedy, you know, it's like
it wasn't like Darwin Cook.
Right, where it was, you know, gone too short, you know, the guy was 88, you know what I mean? It's like you always want to get as much out of them, I guess, as you can, or these people to live as long, but you know, 88 years old, that's not a bad run, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you think about, Vanity Fair just did an article about, like, celebrities that are older than 90.
Yeah.
And
was Stan Lee on the list?
Yes, he was. In fact, they did a photo shoot, and he was there. But it was Stan Lee. It was a lot of comedians, which was interesting, because Carl Reiner's still alive, Mel Brooks is still alive.
Oh, Mel Brooks.
Dick Van Dyke is still alive. They're all over 90.
Wow.
And so I don't know what that says about comedy. You live a long and miserable life as a comedian.
Yeah, maybe it's just that you're bringing so much joy to people.
Yeah, you know? As we've known from the comedians we've known, you don't carry that joy 24 hours a day.
You all are a sad bunch. You're like, look at the clown. Look at the crying clown.
Yeah, but you know, every time I see Carl Reiner was on Conan a couple weeks ago. He's 95.
Yeah.
And it's like every time you see one of these guys, you go, wow, look, he's still there. That's great.
What's like
for
Dick
him.
Van Dyke? I'm always shocked is still alive. And I don't mean
he
any
looks
disrespect.
Fantastic.
He does, and good for him. But it's like, it's like every time you see him, you're just like, hopefully a stiff breeze won't hurt him. You know what I mean? It's like they're so just, it's like Stan Lee. It's like he's so old.
Yeah, but they're so sharp. I mean, Rickles was like that until the end. And I think Rickles was over 90, wasn't he?
I think he was. He was like 93, maybe, 92.
But he was sharp until the end. And it's amazing when you see guys
filthy.
Like that. Yeah. Well, guys like Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks and Dick Van Dyke, I've heard them all on podcasts. Like, they've all done either Marc Maron or Gilbert Gottfried, and really interesting.
Yeah.
So you can get to that age. So I guess 88 is no longer a point where you go, where you go, oh, that's okay. Because he could have had.
I mean,
he could have had another 10 years. And it doesn't happen that often, but the people that we've mentioned look so good, you're disappointed that everybody's not at that point.
Right. And I guess it's like, I think like 85, it's like, once you hit past 85, it's like, how much longer can you expect? That's a really good stretch. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just, that seems like, obviously, I'm sure everyone wants as much time as they can get, but, you know, 88's nothing to sneeze at. You know, that guy saw a lot. You know, he lived through a lot.
He's had a lot of comebacks,
arguably
too.
the most iconic Batman. You know, a lot of stuff I'm seeing is people are posting stuff about, you know, this was the Batman, this was the citizen Batman. This was the Batman that was, like, civic duty Batman that was... You know, it's just like, underneath all the corniness and everything, there was some good stuff there, good messages and stuff.
Well, obviously it was a great show or it wouldn't have lasted.
Yeah.
I just saw a post around, they did a Wonder Woman pilot. Like, the producers of Batman tried to do it with Wonder Woman, and it's 5 minutes of the worst stuff you'll ever see.
Yeah.
So they were able to hit magic, and obviously they did a Green Hornet show that was more serious that didn't work.
Right.
They tried to get Batgirl her own show, and that didn't sell. There was something about that show
that
where
worked.
Just everything came together. And I think for people my generation and older, that was our introduction to Batman. What's the first Batman you remember?
That is the first, because
before the animated series, before Tim Burton.
Yeah, they used to rerun that all the time on television. So we had watched that before. I mean, that was probably our first superhero anything. You know, really quickly on the heels of that, we had Batman the Animated Series, X-Men, and Spider-Man, which are like the big three of like animation for us. But we were watching those reruns of Adam West, and you know, we didn't know what Batman was or any, you know, we were completely hooked. And I think that's one of those things with Batman particularly, it's like, it's kind of like this weird thing that's it's always been around. I don't really know a time when I didn't know who Batman was.
Right.
But Batman initially to me was the pow, zap, bam,
and it was Adam West.
That was Adam West. And I didn't know that those shows were corny, you know what I mean? It's like I didn't understand camp. I was six. Do you know what I mean? I completely believed the peril. I was like, how is he gonna get out of the Venus flytrap monster? And
oh, I had nightmares about that Venus flytrap monster.
It's like that stuff. It was just like it was great. It was it's a great show for kids just because there's violence in it, but it's not gratuitous.
Well, that's why it worked. That's what made it so brilliant, and I think that's what made it endure was that two different audiences were getting two different things out of it. It was,
yeah.
Adam West was also my introduction to Batman, and I was born a few years after it ended. Not a lot, but I watched it, like you, in reruns in the afternoon.
Yeah.
On local TV in the 70s. And, like, Super Friends was on at the same time, so I could see a cartoon Batman once a week.
Right.
But that one didn't really register with me as much as the TV show did.
Yeah, and we had Batman, the two. It's like, so between either it was Super Friends or the Adam West show, but I mean, it's like, I don't know which would have been first, but both were reruns so frequently when I was a kid that it's like, I couldn't tell you what I got first, but that idea of Batman. Batman was just the guy with the cool gadgets in the car.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, he had a sidekick, and he lived in a cave, and yeah, that was, people always forget about the backlash to the 89 Batman. I mean, now it looks cartoony because people have, because a whole new generation has been raised on Nolan.
Right.
But when that Tim Burton movie came out, there was a huge backlash because people were saying, no, Batman is Adam West.
Yeah.
Why would you change that? Because that was the only Batman in people's minds.
Now we live
in a world where you have, you know, the normal average person has 10 Batmans in their head.
Yeah.
You know, Batman's like James Bond. You know, you put somebody else in there and then you change it up. But of course, Batman crosses more media.
Right.
James Bond, you have two. You have books, you have movies.
And movies, that's it.
But Batman is pretty much every media.
Yeah.
You know,
at this point, yeah.
There's podcasts about Batman. There's video games about Batman. There's, you know, obviously every printed medium. But Adam West was kind of the center of all that. And he weathered that well. We actually watched, I put on the Batman movie, the Batman shark repellent.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday at the shop as soon as I heard the news.
Yeah, I started watching it. And I was watching it with Ben. And Ben's like, yeah, I'm not really in the mood for this. Because I want to watch Batman the Animated Series. And I was right about to get into a whole argument with him about, well, Adam West passed away. So we want to watch Adam West. And then I was like, Wait, there's an episode that Adam West did.
He did The Great Ghost.
We put on The Great Ghost, and that's a beautiful episode.
Yeah, that might be my favorite episode of the entire show, just because I was even a kid and I knew that was Adam West. And I think, doesn't Bruce Timm play the race car?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
It's even drawn to look like him.
Yeah, it even looks like him. And I only knew that because, like, Animaniacs always used to draw Bruce Timm in the show, and they'd, like, fuck with the creators of the show.
Although, I think there's a commentary on the DVD where it talks about
that. So it's like I was vaguely aware that was the guy that was, like, behind the whole show, and I just thought that was such, like, a charming little episode of, like, The Gray Ghost is the guy that inspired Batman to be Batman, and it was Adam West, and it was like this hokey guy, and like it was just really a neat episode.
As a kid, The Gray Ghost was my hero.
Yeah.
Really? And he still is.
Yeah. It's cheesy, but it's great.
No, but
it
was Y7. It was made for a 7-year-old. But
if they made a Gray Ghost bust for the animated series, would you get it? Or because it's like he's not one of the villains or the heroes.
I would absolutely get
the
figure.
Absolutely. Yeah, they have to do a figure. Yeah,
especially now.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say that Beware the Great Ghost is his best performance. He's got a lot of range in there. And I was watching with Ben, and Ben was trying to get it. He's like, well, why is he so mad at the Great Ghost? Because he was a Great Ghost. Like when he's smashing all the merchandise. Yeah. I was like, oh, because he's never worked again. He goes, why? He goes, because people just think he's a Gray Ghost. And I'm trying to explain to him like what typecasting is and how your career. And, you know, he's 10. So he's like, why don't you just go work in a restaurant?
Yeah.
I was like, well, when you get old,
right,
you can really only do the thing that you were already doing.
Yeah.
But it was interesting as I was explaining it to him, and I said out loud, I was like, well, that's what happened to Adam West in real life.
Yeah, and that's kind of, I think, why it's this like bittersweet episode, is it hits a little close to home. You know, it's like, it's the same kind of feel of like, less so because Mickey Rourke wasn't a professional wrestler, but the movie The Wrestler, seen that, where it's like,
I thought you were going to Iron Man 2. You're like, Mickey Rourke wasn't really Russian.
No,
but
I meant that's like in the sense
he did have a bird,
right? I mean, in the sense of like the washed up, like, I did this thing, I meant a lot to this entire generation, and now it's like I can't find
work. Nothing for me.
Yeah, it's like that's like that's a really sad circumstance.
Yeah, and honestly, that's entertainment has always been that way, because entertainment is one of those industries where it's not a legacy career industry. You don't get a 401k. You don't get a gold watch when you retire.
Right.
It's just the industry. If you're not in demand anymore, well, that's kind of it. And, you know, more as this culture changes, more and more industries are becoming that way.
Yeah.
So so that story becomes more real to a lot more people. But he really weathered that well. Because, like, you know, in the 70s, he didn't do much. And then it seemed like the generation of kids that grew up with it, that loved Batman, brought him back. Did you ever see Look Well?
No.
Have you ever heard of Look Well?
No.
Look Well was a pilot he did in 1990. And it was written by Conan O'Brien and Robert Smigel.
Okay, who's Robert Smigel?
Robert Smigel is Triumph, the Insult Comic Dog.
Okay.
But he's also written a million things. He created TV Funhouse on Saturday Night Live, and he's one of the biggest writers of that era. And he was a Saturday Night Live writer, and he went with Conan over Conan. And he's been there pretty much ever since. And that was a time when, like, Bob Odenkirk was a writer on Saturday Night Live, and a lot of Simpson guys were there. But they were – Saturday Night Live, you actually don't make that much money.
Yeah.
Which is why everybody leaves.
Right. I remember we were talking about this like a week or two ago.
Yeah, and I've known people that have written for it or worked in it. It's one capacity or another. And it's a place to get known. It's a place to build your credentials.
Yeah.
Obviously the height of that is you're Will Ferrell and you're in every sketch and people love you, and then you immediately make a movie that makes $50 million.
Right.
And now you're making money. But most guys are
it's a stepping stone.
Yeah. And most guys are like Tracy Morgan, leave and then do sitcoms.
Right.
You know, that's the big thing. Or, you know, a lot of them leave and you don't hear from them again. The Daily Show is also like that. The Daily Show, you see people leave all the time.
Right. Either get their own show or...
Because something bigger happens.
Yeah.
You know? If Colbert was doing as well on the Colbert Report as he was doing Letterman, he'd probably still be doing Colbert Report.
Yeah.
In fact, Bobby Moynihan just announced he's leaving because he's getting a sitcom on NBC.
Yeah.
So at that time, guys like Conan and Bob Odenkirk and are writing, and they're always looking for what's the next thing we're going to do, you know? And I think it was Conan's idea. He was like, we should write something for Adam West. And at that point, Adam West hadn't really done anything. At that point, Adam West was in the news for being angry that he's not in the Tim Burton movie.
Oh.
Which is understandable. Honestly, he's not in any of the movies, is he? Other than his. He's in all the TV shows.
Yeah, you're right. He's and you know what? We were just talking about that, about Wonder Woman last week. I was upset that Linda Carter wasn't in Wonder Woman. It never occurred to me to put Adam West in Batman, and I think just because of that tone is so different.
Right. They've never gone back to a tone where that would fit.
Right. But like, and it's tricky because Adam West is such like a... The character is, he's like, he really can't not be
Adam West.
Adam West. And it's just like, that wouldn't fit in like the, especially the Tim Burton. You know, it would have been nice if he was like Commissioner Gordon, right. Like.
But as we know, said, that first Batman movie was trying so hard to get away from it.
Right. I get why they didn't. Yeah. He could have been in later, maybe.
And it's like, where would you put him in Nolan?
Yeah.
Schumacher could have used him.
That's what I'm saying. Schumacher could use him. It would have been nice to see him as like the mayor of Gotham City or something. You know?
And he's been in most of the animated series. He's in Batman, the animated series. I think he played Bruce's father on a few of them. I think in the Batman and maybe Brave and the Bold, he played Thomas Wayne.
Yeah,
which I think is a really nice touch.
Yeah, it actually would have been cool if he was Thomas Wayne and like, well, I guess he would have been way older by now. But it's like in a flashback in one of the Tim Burton's or the Joel Schumacher Batmans.
Yeah, yeah, but again, like he was so iconic,
right?
That as soon as you see him, that
kind of like pulls you out of it.
It pulls you out of it, and I always equate Adam West with William Shatner, because both guys...
Yeah, I agree.
Both guys are big and iconic performances in shows in 1966.
Right.
Both Star Trek and Batman premiered the same fall.
Right.
The difference
was... And they're both very similar in, like, they play these kind of, like...
Over the top bravado, like,
yeah,
heroes. Yeah,
it's like they kind of... They're with cut this, from the same cloth.
The stilted delivery where everyone can do an impression of them.
Right.
The only difference in 1966 was Batman was a hit, Star Trek wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the famous story about Star Trek, was Star Trek really wasn't a hit until they reran it and then made movies and then made more shows. But both those guys are equatable. But if you look at Shatner's career, Shatner has been able to do a lot
more. Kept working, yeah.
I mean, Shatner did movies in the 70s like Kingdom of the Spiders. And then, of course, T.J. Hooker was big in the 80s. He was making T.J. Hooker while he was making the Star Trek movies. Like, he would get time off from T.J. Hooker to make Star Trek 4.
Yeah.
Like, he was always working. Like, he had a sitcom a couple of years ago based on a Twitter feed.
Oh, yeah. I do remember. It's like, it was
Shit
a,
My Dad
Shit
Says.
My Dad Says, and he was the dad.
He was the dad. He was on Boston Legal for a long time.
That's insane.
Like,
he was in Miss Congeniality.
He was in Miss Congeniality, yeah. He's always kind of worked.
Yeah.
And he managed early on. I think both guys, the key to their longevity was they found the humor in it. They both spent a lot of years frustrated that they weren't able to do something more serious after their big iconic show.
Yeah.
And with Shatner, it took until that Saturday Night Live sketch, which, by the way, Robert Smigel wrote.
Oh, there you go.
Bring it back full circle. The Get a Life sketch, which was puke and completely iconic. But that was the turning point for him. That's when he started doing comedy.
Yeah.
And Star Trek IV, like, had moments of comedy in it, but that's... Since then, he's really been a Canadian.
Yeah.
You don't see Shatner in,
he's not in anything serious.
No, and even at his age, he's in his 80s. Even at his age, he could be playing the wise grandfather.
Right.
Or like the broken man who's got a life of regrets. He doesn't do any of that stuff.
Right.
He's like dancing.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing roasts. But it took Adam West a while to kind of find that. But with Adam West, it was more that the audience came to him. And Lookwell was a big part of that. So Lookwell, Conan wrote before he had his late night show and before he was on The Simpsons. So this was like his first attempt to do a show.
Yeah.
Because Conan started at the... Conan went to Harvard, worked on The Lampoon, then went to Saturday Night Live. From Saturday Night Live, went to The Simpsons. From Simpsons, got the late night show. So this is before almost all of that. But Conan loved Adam West, And he said, let's do a show for Adam West. And the pilot was, his name was Look Well, was a detective show in the 70s. And now it's the 90s, and Adam West plays the actor who played Look Well. So again, kind of a wash-up actor. And he's called in to consult on real cases, but he thinks everything is exactly like a TV show.
Okay. I mean, it's a comedy show.
Yeah, and it was a sitcom. Yeah. It was a half-an-hour sitcom, and not actual jokes around it, but the premise is just like, this person can't remember what happened. We'll hit them on the head, and amnesia will reverse itself.
Yeah.
You know, it was all all he knew was TV tropes. So they made a pilot, and it was brilliant, and then the network said, yes, if you cast anyone but Adam West, because people don't care about him. And Conan said, no, this show is about Adam West. I'm not going to go get Robert Stack and do this show again.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get Leslie Nielsen and put him in this show. And then it just never went anywhere. But it was
such a shame.
It was so well known that it made the rounds. The whole thing is on YouTube. I'll post it on the Facebook page. But you can see the whole pilot on YouTube.
Yeah.
And there were... what network was it? Trio? There was a network. There was like a little indie network in the early 2000s that would just show weird stuff. And they would show it all the time.
Yeah.
So it would broadcast. But that was kind of the beginning of people going, well, let's lean into this persona of this blowhard who's a little washed up.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been his persona. Shatner never had the washed up part of it.
Right.
First of all, Shatner's ego would never let him.
Yeah.
But also, he consistently worked. And I think that's why Adam West was so mad at the Tim Burton movie. Was
it could have been
not
his.
not like they were friends, but he's looking at Shatner, who's making Star Trek movie after Star Trek movie after Star Trek movie.
Right,
and he was in the same position. He had a big show in the '60s that people loved, and now they're making movies.
Yeah,
but he felt passed over because they were like, "Yeah, we're making movies based on the character that you played."
That arguably he saved, too, because those books, the comics at the time were so awful.
Well, they were watered down from the comics code.
Right, that they were going to cancel the whole line. They were just going to stop doing Batman books. Show brought it back. And I don't think, you know, it's on this side of history, if people recognize, like, how dire that character was to just being left behind.
Just gone. Just being, like... Being like Green Lantern, where maybe in 20 years we'll bring him back, but it's a totally different story. We're using the name and the basic premise.
Right. And it's like that, you know, that show like was huge.
Or The Flash. Green Lantern, The Flash, a lot of DC characters.
For decades were kind of...
Yeah, but the character doesn't matter. The costume doesn't matter. Green Lantern is a guy with a ring, and it doesn't matter if he got it from... heavy water fumes. Doesn't mean Flash got his powers from heavy water fumes or a lightning bolt.
Right.
It doesn't matter what his costume looks like or what his name is or what city he lives in. We're just going to... Flash is a guy that runs. Green Lantern's a guy with a ring, and everything else can change.
Right.
I mean, the Golden Age Green Lantern is like this magician, Alan
Scott.
Yeah,
he like gets killed in like a train accident, and the green ring brings him back to life, and then it's a magic ring, and it's like this flame.
And it wasn't a science fiction book at all.
It was magic.
It's when they rebooted it with Hal Jordan, they were like, well, you know what? The space launches were happening. So it's like, oh, we'll make him a test pilot. And he's going to go into space. And aliens are going to have it. And that's when the mythology took place. And they've never really been able to quite reach back.
Yeah.
Because the Golden Age Green Lantern's still running around. They've never been able to kind of go back and go, here's how you fit this thing. And Batman could have been that.
Right. It was very, very easily could have been that. And they have made efforts. I mean, tons of writers have come in and tried to explain, like, Alan Scott's powers. And like, well, it's a shard of a power ring or, you know what I mean?
It's a lantern that was lost.
Yeah, they try to tie it back in. I can't remember all the different ways they've tried to do it.
I love that
like,
his weakness is wood.
Yeah.
He's like, it doesn't work on anything.
It's like spray paint a baseball bat yellow and you could beat the tar out of Hal Jordan. Yeah, any one of the Green Lanterns. Yeah.
But I also love that his weakness was wood in 1940 when everything was made of wood. We didn't even really have plastic yet.
Right.
We're using Bakelite for things.
It's awesome.
But that could have easily been Batman if it wasn't for the show.
Right.
And in fact, the only reason they went with Batman was because the rights for Superman were still tied up.
Right.
Because of the George Reeves show in the 50s. They wanted to do Superman.
Yeah.
And as we said earlier in the show, they tried to do Wonder Woman. They really did not care what superhero it was.
Right. They just wanted anything to fit the mold of flashy, colorful engine. Right. You know, the, anything would have done. They would have done Green Lantern if they could have pulled off the effects. You know, right. What I mean? And it didn't matter.
They went to DC just because those were the best known superheroes at that point. Marvel was still kind of an indie title,
right?
Like it was getting bigger and bigger, but no, you know, William Dozier was not going to call up Stan Lee and say, "Hey, I want to make a Fantastic Four show."
Right.
You know, it was just way too different. So it was a stroke of luck because, as you said, Batman was in danger of being canceled. And as we say many times on the show, there was no superhero more in the public consciousness than Batman.
Yeah.
People say Batman, people now say Marvel just as a brand. They're like, yeah, Marvel. It's like people used to talk about Iron Man. They used to be like, well, I know who Iron Man is and I know who Spider-Man is.
Right.
And now people just go, well, Marvel. Because right. Marvel is Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy and
yeah, people Spider-Man. Know what it looks like.
People still don't do that with DC.
Yeah.
People say Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. And people have always done that. Green Lantern came close to changing that, but then the Ryan Reynolds movie bombed.
Right. Maybe Flash is getting there now because of the show and he's going to be in the new Justice League movie. Yeah, it's like it's changing slowly, I think, but Batman is a brand.
Yeah.
And
I don't think Flash will ever be a Batman.
No, like, no, never.
As long as that show runs or whatever movies he's in.
Yeah, I think it's like it was an interview with Adam West, and I think it was on that Secret Origin. It's like the documentary about the formation of DC Comics.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one.
It's a good one, yeah. Ryan Reynolds narrates it, so it's right around Green Lantern.
Yeah. And, which now makes no sense. You're like, why is Deadpool narrating?
Yeah. But like they interview Adam West and he was saying, you know, 66 and these when he was running around, it's like there were the three B's of the 60s, the Beatles, Bond and Batman. And, you know, it was on that level of it wasn't anywhere near, obviously, what Beatlemania was. But, you know, that was it was huge. It had such an enormous cultural impact.
Right. But it came, but it left as fast
as it
showed
up. Oh, it was like a
up.
Flash in the pan or whatever you call
like
it.
The,
you know?
Yeah, the middle of the second season, the ratings just tanked. And
yeah.
When you watch those Blu-rays, you can see why. Because the first season's really great. It's really inventive. There's a bunch of stories they do word for word from old Golden Age comics. And then by season two, it's a formula. Like you can, the beats are all exactly the same. It's like every single episode opens with a museum or a bank
right.
or a gala. And then there's an explosion of pink smoke.
Yep.
The villain shows up, robs everybody. Then you cut to Commissioner Gordon and Chief O'Hara saying they can't do anything about it. They call Batman.
It's like, what could they do? Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. They don't even try to solve the crimes anymore. They're just just get Batman.
No. But they call Wayne Manor. Alfred answers the phone.
Yeah.
Alfred goes to the living room, tells them that Commissioner Gordon's on the phone.
He interrupts their chess game.
Interrupts their chess game or their painting or their fishing act or their fencing. They come up with an excuse for Aunt Harriet. They say, we'll be there. They go down the poles. Title sequence. Come back from the title sequence. It's the same footage
right.
of them getting in the Batmobile and going to... And it's literally that all the time. They have a fight in the middle. They have a cliffhanger. And every episode starts to become the same.
Yeah.
And the only thing that changes is like the celebrity villain, maybe some of the jokes. But that second season just already feels tired.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's like they just remade the same episode over and over and
over
again.
Right. And they don't do that in the first season. And then the third season is just... it's like the third season of Star Trek. There's no budget left. They got cut down to half an hour. They squeeze in Batgirl. So the third season is different, but it's not good.
Yeah, there's Batgirl in it, though. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, Yvonne Craig. Yvonne Craig is hotter in the episode of Star Trek she does. She
I don't know if I've seen
plays
that.
A green alien woman who's in like a skimpier outfit than the Batgirl outfit.
Yeah. 60s seemed like an awesome time. Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But you can see why people was like, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
And left because they never figured out a way to reinvent it in a way that the comics have always done.
Right.
There are so many things they could have done. But there was, in reruns, there's a familiarity to it. And as we said, when you're a little kid, that's your introduction to Batman. When you're a little kid, you like repetition.
Yeah.
I mean, kids watch the same movie over and over and over again. So... It doesn't matter that it's the same episode because now it's the Penguin and yesterday was the Riddler.
Right, and it totally felt different. You know, I used to watch it with my brothers and my sister and it was always, all right, you really like Catwoman, you really like the Riddler, your favorite's the Joker, my favorite's the Penguin. It's like, we all had our favorite villains and like, you know, we used to do those fights constantly like as kids, like that's how we played. And, you know, that show, it was just, it's a very comforting show
Right. So that helps when you're a kid. Whereas Star Trek, my favorite quote about Star Trek is in Futurama, where Fry goes, you know, Star Trek, 79 episodes, 30 good ones.
That's awesome.
Star Trek is always different.
Yeah.
Every episode of Star Trek is different. There's a couple of tropes they repeat.
Sure.
My favorite is Kirk talking a computer to death, which happens in like 6 episodes.
Right.
And it's always the same argument. He's like, what is your mission? To be logical. What is your second mission? To protect humanity. But you don't let humanity live. Therefore, you're not protecting them. Therefore, you are the danger. Illogical. And then smoke.
Right.
Sometimes it's a guy. Kirk, sometimes it's a wall.
Can talk a computer into suicide in 10 minutes. It's a superpower.
A woman in a bed in 5.
Right.
A computer into suicide in 10.
Right.
That's how I became captain.
Yep.
But if you go back to those episodes, again, 3 seasons, not as many episodes because they were doing 1 hour a week, not 2 half an hours, but you don't get that repetition. So even though you can say, oh, well, it was back then.
Yeah.
You know, or it was a genre. You don't see that in a show that was on the exact same time. So the thing that burned it out initially is the thing that it makes it endearing today.
Yeah.
I mean, I have never stopped loving Adam West Batman. There were times I made fun of it, sure.
Yeah, it's definitely easy to make fun of, you know, and I think it's something, as a kid, I really liked it. And then you get to be a teenager, and it's not cool anymore. You know what I mean? Batman, you want Tim Burton, or you want Dark Knight Returns, or, you know, whatever.
Right, and when I was a teenager, the Tim Burton movie was coming out, and Dark Knight Returns had just happened. So the Dark Batman was in vogue, but the only thing really on was the Adam West Batman. So I really, really reacted against it, but I still taped it. I still enjoyed it. And everybody goes through this arc. When you're a kid, you take it seriously.
Yeah.
You become a teenager, you think you're better than it.
Yeah.
And then you become an adult and you realize, oh, it was doing this on purpose the whole time.
Right.
There's some reason when you're a teenager, you think you're smarter than the 66 Batman.
Totally. And that's what I'm saying. I remember getting to be a teenager and, you know, remembering, oh, that was the show I watched when I was a kid, and it's still fun, the fight scenes, but, you know, by and large, it's really silly.
Yeah, and then you don't realize it's supposed to be silly.
Yeah, well, it's like one of the
you're like, fuck you, silly Batman.
No, I agree, because I think the one gag that was like the turning point when I got it, when I was like, oh, this show is doing this shit on purpose, is when Batgirl was in the show and like Batman, Robin, and Batgirl like creeping down a hallway, and Batman goes to put his hand back to stop Batgirl, and he puts it right on her breast. And as a kid, I was like, oh, he's just stopping her. You know, I have no idea what's going on. But and then as a teenager, I'm like, fuck, this show's stupid. And then I see him in my like 20s or when I was like 19 or something.
You're like, I'd like to do that.
Well, no, but I'm saying it's like, then I was like, oh, it's like they're being way over the top and ridiculous and silly about it. It's like, when you get it, you know, as an older person, it's like, it's like rediscovering it almost, you know? Because then it's like, there's all these other jokes.
It's like a brand new show. And you realize when you go back into it, those are jokes.
Yeah.
There are setups and punchlines.
Right, yeah. It's a punchline, yeah.
It's not just the tone that it's over the top and goofy. There are actual jokes in there. I think for me it was the surfing contest. The Tim Burton Batman movie was on, was out, and you know, Jack Nicholson was the Joker, and then I'm watching Cesar Romero and Batman surfing, and I'm like, I don't know, 16, 17, and I'm like, but they're still wearing their costumes.
Right.
And then I realized,
like, they're going to get wet.
I'm like, there's no way they thought this was good.
Right.
And made this. There's no way they were like, people are going to be excited by the surfing contest.
Yeah.
And then I started to look at the rest of it. You know, sometimes you just have that turning point. That was like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I spent 8 episodes, and I watched it when it was when it started to go on reruns.
Yeah.
So I didn't follow it, but I watched one episode in like season 2 or 3, and I was like, ah, these guys are assholes, and I changed the channel. And then Comedy Central started rerunning it, and by that point it's in season 6, and I'm like, there's 6 seasons of this, and Danny DeVito's in it? I'm like, there's probably something about it.
Yeah, there has to be.
And it was on a lot, so I just kept running into it, and for like 6 or 7 episodes, I just hated them. And then all of a sudden the switch flipped and I was like, oh, I'm supposed to hate them.
Yeah.
And that was before we had a lot of unlikable characters in American television.
Right.
Like, you were always supposed to like them. The problem people had with Seinfeld is that Seinfeld's not completely likable.
Right.
Like, Seinfeld's a little likable because they're relatable, but then they make right. terrible choices. And in Britain, you always had that. You always had things like Fawlty Towers or Blackadder or The Young Ones or Absolutely Fabulous, where you were just like, these people are horrible.
Right.
And then I was like Beavis and Butthead. Like, you're watching it to see them get their comeuppance for the terrible things they're doing, which is what usually happens. But it took me a long time to turn that key. And it was, for Batman, it was years.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, like I said, I think it's something where that's a really good milestone for Batman. Probably one of the most important for that show particularly, because it showed that, and Tim Burton did this much later, and Frank Miller obviously to a biggest extent as well, is that Batman works kind of no matter what you do to him. It's like that character, more than maybe any other character, can be bent way out of shape and still work.
Yeah.
And it's a line we've talked about on the show, you've mentioned before, is like,
yeah, you can't do that with Spider-Man.
You can't put Spider-Man on the moon in a base with the Avengers. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
But Batman could
be... They'll do that in a Marvel team-up or something, and you'll just be like, the story's about why it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And my favorite example of that for Spider-Man is when they did the second... when Buscema came back to do Avengers in like the late 80s, early 90s. It was probably just the late 80s.
Yeah.
And they tried to put Spider-Man on the team, and they did the story where
Roger Stern, yeah.
They had Nebula, and it was out in space, and it was all this cosmic stuff, and then the Avengers got lost in like a pocket universe with Spider-Man. And the entire story, Spider-Man's like barely trying to like figure out what's going on, and Captain America's like, dude, this is the job. Can you do this or not? And then at like the end of it, Spider-Man's like, I'm out, guys. I can't. I just want to go fight, you know, chase the Shocker around a jewelry store. You know, yeah, it's like, I can't go to different dimensions.
Yeah, Bill Monroe and I, we'll have an announcement about how Bill's doing great, by the way.
Yeah,
let's just talk about that now.
They're wholesome updates. I love it.
He's making leaps and bounds. I announced at the end of last week's episode that Bill Monroe, great friend of the show, he comes on every couple of months, had a stroke, and he's in the hospital now, but he's gone from like bed to a wheelchair to he's getting a cane. He's already been out and having a Starbucks, and if you know Bill, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
He posted last night that they were watching Wonder Woman, and
yeah, I guess he got to see the movie.
I guess they let him out of the hospital, or
yeah.
But he also mentioned the Linda Carter show, so maybe they were watching DVDs in the hospital room. He's not quite up to talking now, so we've been texting. But he's doing really well. And his show, 2 Minute Talk Tips, is on hiatus for now.
Yeah.
So if you were listening to that, he will bring it back when he's ready. But for right now, it's...
he's got a lot on his plate. You know,
yeah.
We just want Bill to take care of himself. He's a wonderful man.
He's got half of his body to get moving again.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a lot of work to do.
But Bill and I always... our phrase for Spider-Man we always like is smashing up the city.
Yeah.
Where we're like, the X-Men are dealing with like racial prejudice, and the Fantastic Four are going into dimensions, and the Avengers are keeping the world, and Spider-Man is just, that guy's smashing up the city.
Right, yeah. Gotta stop the Rhino from knocking over the deli.
Right, but you're right. But Batman, you can do the smashing up the city issue, and you can do the space issue.
Yeah.
And it all works. I always find that the two goalposts for me are the Adam West show and the Kelly Jones run of Batman. And Kelly Jones who's been on the show, did this really gothic Batman, and all the stories were pure horror.
Yeah.
You know, they were outright horror. Like when he would have guest stars, it would be Swamp Thing and Demon.
Yeah.
And Dead Man. And it was a total horror book. Or Arkham Asylum, Grant Morrison's first Batman book, Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
Is terrifying.
Right.
But you can always do that with it. And that's kind of interesting. Leads me a little bit to another news story, is that Warner Brothers announced this week that Joss Whedon is doing extensive reshoots on Justice League.
And that kind of got buried, because I think that was like earlier in the week, and it was when it came out, I was like, oh, this is probably going to be our topic.
Yeah, well, I think this week everybody was still really focused on Wonder Woman. Most of the mainstream media was like, how well it did. It made $100 million. And
I'm glad it did really well. Like I said, it's not a great movie. That third act's a bit of a mess, but it's I'd watch that. I could watch that movie over and over again. That girl is perfect.
She's great.
And I love her.
The more
Wonder
I see her in interviews, the more I like her.
Yeah.
She's got a real charisma to her.
She does. It's like she's a magic person. It's like somebody did a gif of her online, and she's
a warrior princess.
She is. And it's like a gif of her from the set, it looks like, and she's like clowning around and she does like the Wonder Woman spin and she's got like this like awesome grin on her face. She just looks like she's having the time of her life on set.
Yeah.
And it's like a kind of little homage to that Wonder Woman movie, but it's like she's so charming in interviews and you know, it's like
she had a great interview the other day where she's got daughters and she said she takes them to the playground and they run up to other moms and go, "My mom's Wonder Woman," and the other mom goes, "Yeah, every mom is Wonder Woman."
That's
and she just loves that. But speaking of which, with the these extensive reshoots going on, we might have two different Batmans with Ben Affleck. Because I remember we were discussing a couple weeks ago when Joss Whedon took over, how much can he do? Apparently,
right.
He's doing way more than anyone but me thought, because I thought he's going to do as much as he can. But that Batman saying Joss Whedon dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, basically taking the place of, like, Captain America. That's not the Batman that was in Batman vs. Superman.
Right, and I'm still in the box of extensive reshoots. I agree that I'd much prefer this movie to look a lot more like a Joss Whedon film or a Joss Whedon project than a Zack Snyder project. Because, as I said, like, watch Sucker Punch or Watchmen. This guy's a terrible director. But I'm saying it just seems like this movie's just, it's that much more crippled coming out of the gate. It's just like, how much harder could they make this on themselves? Do you know what I mean? It's like, just push the fucking release date back. Push it right back until early next year. Make it, you know, an early spring movie. It's like, it has to. It's just like, what in the trailer is even going to be in the film? Do you know what I mean? If they're doing extensive reshoots.
That was a long trailer we saw at San Diego last year.
We saw a lot of footage. And
you know, with Suicide Squad, a lot of stuff that was in that trailer didn't show up because they also did extensive reshoots for Suicide Squad.
And that's what, and Wonder Woman had extensive reshoots.
Yeah.
And it's like, you guys need to pump the brakes, stop setting release dates, and fix these fucking movies before they release them. Because it's like, it's just like Wonder Woman, I think, dodged a bullet. I think that third act we talked about is clearly...
It was clearly reshot.
Reshot, but it still worked. And the charisma of that character carried the rest of that movie. Hopefully, she'll be able to do that in Justice League, but she wasn't able to do that for Superman and Batman because she wasn't in it that much. And she's going to have a lot of other characters to balance. Fucking Mera, Aquaman's wife, is in this movie. And it's like, how much screen time is Mera gonna get? You know what I mean? It's like, what is she doing in this
movie? Hippolyta's in this again. Connie Nielsen is in Justice League.
I know, and it's like, I'm super thrilled to see her come back, but it's like, I just don't understand how they're gonna cram all this shit into...
J.K. Simmons is Commissioner Gordon in Justice League.
Why is a Commissioner Gordon role in a Justice League movie? It makes no sense.
But you know what? It could very well be like Glenn Close in
Guardians of the
Galaxy.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a high-profile actor.
Doing 5 minutes.
5 minutes, but kind of bringing it. John C. Reilly.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, the more they announce about it, and the more we hear about it, the worse it seems like it's going to get. And I want it to do so good.
I disagree. I think however much we can inch this closer to being Avengers, I am all for it. Just keep pushing.
Well,
Joss Whedon comes from decades of television. He can work fast,
and hopefully he can pull this out of the free fall it appears to be in. Because I do.
Wonder Woman did it. We were told that was a train wreck.
That's true. But I really like the actress that plays Wonder Woman. I watch that girl in anything. Mm. I actually like Ben Affleck as Batman. Contrary to what I initially thought, I thought he was going to be terrible.
Yeah, I thought he gave a good performance in Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, right. He did good, and it's, you know,
Henry Cavill, like, you can't genetically, you can't find anybody to look more like Superman. And honestly, he's fine. He hasn't done anything that's bothered me.
Right. It's just, he's in awful movies. He's like the kid who played Spider-Man last before Tom Holland.
Yeah,
Andrew Garfield.
It's
like, he's not bad at Spider-Man. He's just, they're not giving him anything good to do.
Yeah, it's like Pierce Brosnan's Bond.
Right. And
he got one good movie out of four.
In the trailer, from the little I've seen of Jason Momoa's Aquaman, go for it, dude. Be the Barbarian Aquaman. You look great.
Yep.
You want to, you know, be that version of him. You sound great. The only two guys I'm just like, Cyborg and Flash are just like in the way people, do you know? And it's like, I like those characters, but nothing in those trailers. Flash looks so unrecognizable.
Yeah, Flash is a mess. At least they shaved his beard and cut his hair.
Yeah.
Which they did between Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad. But That's the most frustrating because I don't watch Flash anymore. I watched the first season and I enjoyed it enough.
Yeah.
And then I started season two and it was so deep into Legends of Tomorrow and the other shows that I just had to check out. But I liked him and I can understand you've decided to keep those universes separate. Okay?
I think it's a mistake, but I get it.
I agree. I also think it's a mistake. But then again, we've talked about this too. Is the TV show not consistent with itself? There are four shows that go together. There are two more that sit outside.
Right.
So
it just would have been easier because you could have just grabbed that kid that plays the Flash, the guy that plays Green Arrow, and there's the rest of your Justice League. There's five guys. That's enough. You're good. And you want Cyborg in too? Totally fine. There's one more origin.
But you know what I was saying? You could have grabbed Tom Welling for Man of Steel, and they didn't do it. I mean, and honestly, and you know, I guess Smallville no longer exists because that's a completely different Green Arrow than we have in Arrow.
Right.
So I understand what a mess it can be.
Yeah.
We're getting a Teen Titans live action show. Who knows what's that's going to do to everything else?
Insane. Do you hear the rumor? And this is totally fan bullshit. There's no way this is real. They're like, Gotham is the Owlman show.
Oh, that's total fan conspiracy.
You heard
conspiracy.
This shit? It's
well,
like,
that's the fans' way
of rationalizing.
Rationalizing how fucking far afield it is from anything resembling Batman.
Yeah.
Although, goddamn this show, because I was in...
You're still watching it.
Well, I was on a business trip. I was in Kentucky for a few days, which was... It was beautiful country, and it was a really interesting experience, but honestly, I was nowhere near a city, so at the end of the day, I went to my hotel room and watched whatever was on TV.
Yeah.
And went to the gym and worked out. That was, like, my evenings. So I watched the two-hour finale of Gotham Live, and... all pretty fucking terrible, but god damn it, Dr. Bashir from Deep Space Nine shows up as Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, is did they bring him?
2 minutes in the last episode, and I'm like, oh.
That's awesome. See, that's how they get you.
But they do all this bullshit where, like, Bruce Wayne's brainwashed, and he stabs Alfred and kills Alfred.
Jesus.
And then I'm like, and then I said out loud in the hotel room, Lazarus Pit.
Yeah.
Which, of course, right next to them. And then he comes back 5 minutes later. Because that's what that show does to people.
It sounds terrible.
So, it's all... the thing is, DC's all a mess. But Wonder Woman's a good movie. So, I'm taking the opposite tack they want me to take. Where they want me to take... All these movies are connected. And it's a whole universe. Like Marvel. With Marvel, I'm in there. With Marvel, they give me a character I don't particularly care about. Like Guardians of the Galaxy or Doctor Strange or Ant-Man.
Yeah.
I still go because I know all those movies are consistently good. And I will at least be entertained.
Right.
With DC, let's take it movie by movie.
Yeah,
let's not
it's like
think
baby
about
steps.
It. I don't care if Joss Whedon breaks the entire universe if he makes a good Justice League movie.
Yeah, and it's like... regardless of what a turd that movie will or will not be, Wonder Woman's getting a sequel.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, I'm all for it. Make as many of those as you want and take the fucking the leash off of those people. Let those people who are making that movie, if they bring that same director back, whoever directed this one, get less in the way people to have a say in what that movie is and just let them make a Wonder Woman movie without... interference, you know?
Well, I think they will. And they're working with trying to get Patty Jenkins back. They did not sign her to a sequel because I don't think they expected to make one.
I think they should. Didn't they announce a sequel after the returns?
Yeah, I mean, this movie destroyed
at the box office.
They did not have her under contract, and that may have changed during the week. But
yeah, hopefully.
But like CNN had Patty Jenkins on by herself.
Right.
Just to talk about like what a big deal this was. And she's like the first female director to crack 100 million, and this is her second film.
Yeah.
Which I don't give a shit about second film because, you know what, Joss Whedon's second film was Avengers, so
right. There's
no precedent there. You know, Rian Johnson's second film is going to be Star Wars.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's interesting. And real quick, because we're going to wrap up here real short, the Black Panther trailer
that leads us to the Black Panther trailer.
Yeah, and this was going to be the topic this week, and then the news with Adam West. What are your thoughts on that trailer initially?
I didn't really care. I think it looks good.
Yeah.
I did not realize that Human Torch was in it as somebody.
Oh, Michael B. Jordan's going to kill Raven or Killmonger. He's like a... Black Panther is shitty villains. There's no other way to put it.
Yeah.
And Killmonger's one of them.
But we got Andy Serkis' Claw.
And that's all. The only thing...
And we got Martin Freeman in it.
Yeah, he's in it. Yeah. It's the same guy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was interesting. I really like the trailer. I think it looks phenomenal. It's another one of those trailers that's like, look at how bright and colorful the Marvel Universe is.
Right.
It's like
even all in Africa.
All this Wakandan stuff was so interesting and colorful. And what's crazy about the trailer is like, not a lot of Black Panther in that trailer.
There's not a lot of anything in that trailer. And I watched
it's a teaser, I guess, too.
I watched it twice. But it's coming in February. There's no story in it at all. And I think that's why I didn't click in. Basically, it was 2 minutes of, look how we designed Wakanda.
Yeah.
There's a couple of shots of Black Panther, and he looks exactly the way he does in Civil War.
Right.
So it's like, okay, there's Black Panther. There's your guy. Here's a bunch of people that are in the cast. Here's a bunch of design shots about Wakanda. Here's some choreographed fights.
Yeah.
And we're done. Like, I couldn't believe it was as long as it was. People were complaining. Maybe this was a backlash against that. But people were complaining about the Spider-Man Homecoming trailer because they think they've seen the whole story.
I stopped watching the trailers because Robert Downey Jr., I'm following him on Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're posting like clip after clip after clip of this movie. It's like, this clip's 2 minutes. I'm like, what are you doing showing me a 2 minute clip in this?
I don't think these new clips are from the movie because they're all about Spider-Man watching the NBA Finals. So I think
you think it's like just regardless, I'm not watching any of it.
Extra stuff that's been shot.
Yeah.
Either it's been in the movie and redubbed to be about the NBA Finals, or they're shooting new commercials because Sony's working with Disney. Disney
right.
has ABC. The NBA Finals are probably on ABC. I have no idea. But yeah, that's the opposite where it's like, we feel like we've seen
There's
whole movie.
Too much.
I personally feel that we won't know until we're in the movie. It's possible that's, we've seen like some subplots and some stuff.
Sure.
But it's possible this movie's packed with a lot more stuff they haven't shown us. But Black Panther was the complete opposite where I'm like, I don't know anything more about Black Panther than I knew before I saw the trailer.
Yeah, 2 weeks
ago. Other than like the design of Wakanda and that Michael B. Jordan is in it. Like,
yeah, and both of that stuff, it's like I didn't obviously know anything about what they were going to do with Wakanda, but it's like I knew Michael B. Jordan was in it. I knew Claw was going to be in it. I knew The Hobbit was going to be in it. It's like there wasn't anything.
Well, they were all in other movies. They were all in Civil War or Age of Ultron.
Right. And it's like yeah, it's I really liked it. I thought it's a tease. You know, it's like, so it's the teaser, it's not the full trailer. I know I was shocked we got it this early because I guess I didn't realize
we got the poster a day before. I thought that's all we were going to get.
That's what I thought. I thought that was it for the summer. You know, it's going to be interesting. We'll probably have that teaser before Spider-Man. But the full trailer, I thought, like, we wouldn't get a trailer until, like, Thor Ragnarok.
Maybe that'll be the second trailer.
You know? Yeah. And that's what's weird, is that the Thor Ragnarok trailer wasn't a teaser trailer. It was a trailer, and I know what that whole movie's going to be about. You know
right.
what I mean?
And Thor, I thought, was the right balance, because Spider-Man does show you a lot.
Like yeah, I was upset with the last trailer I watched
I don't know
for
what
Spider-Man.
The percentage is, whether it's 20 or 80% of
but
that
it was
movie.
Too much.
Thor, Black Panther showed me nothing.
Yeah.
And Thor showed me, I feel like, 20%. Like, I don't know how Loki fits in. I don't know why they cut his hair. I don't know how much Hela is in it. I don't know how much Jeff Goldblum is in it.
Right. Hammer gets destroyed, when does that happen? Does that happen at the beginning of the movie? Is that the end of the movie?
Yeah, Doctor Strange is not in it. And as we were discussing, Thor's in the extra scene of Doctor Strange. Because Doctor Strange is going to play a part in this movie, but we don't see him. So... And that movie's coming out first. Well,
yeah.
After Spider-Man, but before Black Panther. So I feel like that was enough.
Yeah.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week. I got a couple of things. I want to talk about this really quick. I've been getting the Marvel Legends Guardians of the Galaxy, which I don't really care about. There's a Build-A-Figure I don't care about, but I've been getting them one by one. But there is an Angela figure in this set that's great, and I just love the big fuck you to Tom McFarlane that this Angela figure is, because she's clearly the best figure of that character ever made, and that was a character that was co-created by a guy who owns a toy company,
right?
Who lost the rights. The whole story is that Neil Gaiman created Angela in the fill-in issue he wrote of Spawn, and Todd told him that they would co-own it. And Neil never got it in writing. Neil actually mentions it in his book, View from the Cheap Seats, that he's like, advice for freelancers. He had an essay and one of his is get everything in writing. He's like, yeah. I'm having an argument with somebody who told me something, but I didn't get it in writing. I'm like, oh, Angela?
They don't get along? McFarlane and Gaiman?
Neil sued him. Gaiman sued him. And it went on for years and years and years, and Angela disappeared from Spawn. And they started doing, like, they started just changing the name. Like, all of a sudden, Angela was blonde and called Tiffany.
Yeah, okay.
That was just to step around Neil Gaiman's lawsuit. So Neil Gaiman finally won, and then immediately he got all the rights to Angela. He got all the rights from Todd. Like, they were supposed to co-own it, but Todd lost so bad that he got all the rights. And he immediately just turned over to Marvel. He's like, hey, you want to buy this? So Neil sold it. So now we have a Spawn character in fucking Marvel Legends, and I have it next to, like, the only McFarlane Spawn figure I have, and it just makes me laugh.
Yeah, anything despite Todd McFarlane, I'm all about.
Yeah, we're talking about that. When I was on my trip, I found a little comic book store in, like, a little town. And I never try to leave a comic store empty-handed. So I was kind of just looking around for something, and they had a hardcover of, like, the early Todd McFarlane Spawns, and it's such a guilty pleasure for me. First of all, I was a fan of McFarlane on Spawn, and second of all, Spawn is nothing but Batman and Spider-Man mashed together, and that, those are my two favorite characters.
It's like
characters.
The only thing it's missing is, like, the Fantastic Four element, and it'd be like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, basically, if you replace the zombie element
with like, sci-fi and family adventure... Yeah.
That so I hate myself for liking these, and then I was reading them, and they're awful, but they're hilarious. And then right at the time you want to quit, Capullo comes in, and you're like, oh, look, Capullo before New 52 Batman.
Yeah.
And now I've talked about it enough where I'm not going to mention my second. I'll save my second thing for next week. But yeah, I love that McFarlane now is like. Just living off of Walking Dead. He's just doing Walking Dead figures. And there was like one Spawn figure they released. They brought Spawn back, but of course it had no articulation the way the classic Spawn figures had no articulation. And it didn't sell, and it's now on clearance in Toys R Us while Angela is in like a Build-A-Figure set based on the big blockbuster movie.
It's like,
and she's great. She's a great figure.
This is insane because they put this character. I don't know what's going on in the book right now because they rebooted it because fuck Marvel.
Guardians or Spawn?
Both.
No one knows what's going on. You don't order Spawn.
We don't. But in Guardians, they put her on the Guardians of the Galaxy team. There is a possibility that this character will appear in a movie Guardians of the Galaxy 3. It's possible. And it's unlikely because
Marvel owns it. Neil Gaiman sold it.
That's right.
He didn't license it. He sold it.
That's right.
He didn't want the character.
He just wanted the paycheck.
He didn't want to be cheated.
Where's my money, honey? And it's like if they actually make the movie and this character even shows up briefly, it's just like a billboard-sized middle finger to Todd McFarlane.
Especially because Todd McFarlane has been talking about a Spawn sequel for like 10 years.
Yeah, I think he's the only one still talking about that. I don't think anyone else cares.
Nobody remembers that. That's why I find it so fascinating. And I talk about this all the time. I'm fascinated by longevity and branding.
Yeah.
Because, like, why is Deadpool one of the most popular Marvel characters and Spawn is a 90s footnote?
Yeah.
Spawn was the number one comic for years. Spawn was beating X-Men while the animated series was on.
Yeah, that's the stuff that really blows my mind.
It was beating Batman during Nightfall.
It's like when Teen Titans... under when George Perez and Marv Wolfman were doing it, was outselling X-Men. Any book that outsells the X-Men in arguably their heyday blows my mind.
I'm still amazed Avengers outsells the X-Men today.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So mine this week is a bit weird because I've had a kind of a rough week, but they just released a Mike Mignola DC Universe hardcover. And I haven't had a chance to read any of this stuff yet, but I cracked it open the other day. I was like, flipping through
What's in it? Do you know?
I have no idea. It's like a lot of Batman stuff, Gotham by Gaslight. I think Cosmic Odyssey is in there.
Ooh, that's a really good book.
Yeah, and it's all this stuff that I've obviously read 90% of Hellboy, probably. I haven't read any of the BPRD stuff, but all the Mignola
Hellboy stuff I've read.
All the stuff he drew and wrote, I think I've read, or at least the majority of it. And Mignola's one of those guys where it's like... When I list like my favorite comic book artists, I don't think he's usually in my top 10, but every single time I look at anything that guy draws, I'm like, this guy's a fucking genius. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
we've met him a couple of times too.
Yeah, he's really nice.
He's really nice, very soft spoken, so we've never asked him to be on the podcast.
Yeah,
he's always like, yeah, Yeah, thank you.
The only time I met him, I think, was at Oh Yeah Comics, and we were drinking that Hellboy beer that they came out, which was really cool. And he was total sweetheart, like I said, but great guy. But
I also met him at one of the New York Comic Cons and had a very similar experience. I wasn't drinking.
Right.
But, like, very nice.
Right, but brief, quiet, nothing crazy. But it's seeing a guy like that that's just, like... I get he's very heavily influenced by Kirby and all this other stuff, but it's like the guy is completely marching to the beat of his own drum when it comes to like his comic book art. No one's really doing anything quite like this guy, and I might be an idiot. I completely don't know, but I think he's one of the smartest draftsmen in comic books, like with what he's doing. But what I'm saying is, like, it's incredible to see a guy like that who you only really see on these indie books doing the Justice League or Batman, and it's like I'd kill to have him do Avengers, just do like a 6-issue miniseries of like the 1960s Avengers or something. It's like he's just got such a goofy, crazy style. It's just incredible to see him doing superhero comics like that, because that's not the normal look for any of those characters. He doesn't have, when he's doing Batman, that's not, maybe that's the easiest character for him to work on, but it's like Cosmic Odyssey. It's like, here's the new gods, and it's like, it's just insane to see him draw that stuff. It's really cool.
I just ran across some of his early Marvel art, which predates his DC.
Yeah.
The Alpha Flight Omnibus, which is like the big John Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
The last issue or two is Mike Mignola, because Byrne switched Alpha Flight for Hulk, because it turns out he never liked Alpha Flight. And honestly,
which is crazy. It's his own creation.
It's his own creation, and he couldn't care less. It's like a redheaded stepchild.
Right.
And I read the
whole... It's like John Buscema on Avengers.
I read the whole book. You can tell.
Yeah.
Because I pulled out the Alpha Flight book and put it next to the Fantastic Four omnibus that he did at the same time, and you can see where his attention was going.
Yeah.
But he decided to do Hulk, so he switched with the team that was doing Hulk at the time, which was Bill Mantlo and Mike Mignola. So there's some Alpha Flight Mike Mignola. And then
that's awesome.
I found a graphic novel he did in a Wolverine trade paperback.
Yeah.
That was, it's called The Jungle Adventure. And it's one of the Silvestri trades, just because Larry Hammer wrote it and that's when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Wolverine fighting Apocalypse in the jungle.
That's awesome.
And it's
great. That's what I'm saying. I think I've seen him do X-Men covers and stuff. And the covers are great. And it's really interesting to see. But it's like the style's rusty, you know?
Well, he's not there yet. He's not as minimalist.
Yeah. And
like,
that's like
Hellboy is... You look at that first Hellboy
book. It's insane.
And it's... His style's a lot different than that first Hellboy book than it is today.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like to see him do that kind of level of minimalist. Like I said, it's like he's subtracting so much from it and still conveying way more than 90% of the guys working in comics, probably.
Yeah, I do want to see that DC book. I saw it for sale, and I want to know what issues are in it first.
Yeah.
Well, you can follow me and Not On My Book on Twitter. That is the official Caffeinated Comics Facebook feed. You can like us on Facebook. Did I say Facebook feed or did I say Twitter feed?
Oh, I wasn't listening.
I'm not editing. You can listen to us on Facebook.com. I feel like we've undid the entire episode just
it's
there.
It. It's I don't we got to re-record.
Yeah. Basically, the entire episode ended with, I don't know what I just said. I don't listen to what you say. Good night, everybody.
That's not what I meant. I just, you know, the bumper's at the end. It's like, I don't have to participate.
Anyway, go to Facebook.com/caffeinatedcomics. That's where we post all the news and trailers. And you can listen to us on iTunes and on Stitcher and or at caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com, where every episode is free from January 2013 to today. And
you can sometimes find me at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!